All right. Our next case this morning is Wooden-Owsley versus the City of Chicago, case number 093886. Mr. Flaxman.
Thank you. May it please the court. This case is about probable cause to arrest. The victims of a carjacking described the offender as a black male, 5'9" tall, weighing about 145 pounds. Mr. Owsley, when he was arrested about a month later, was 6'7" tall and weighed 200 pounds. The defendants say that this is just one of those minor inconsistencies we always see in eyewitness identification cases where, well, witness said he was 5'9", he's really 5'10". Witness said he's 30 years old and he's really 33 years old. Mr. Owsley is a giant. He's taller than 95% of the male population. The man described by the victims was of average size. If they had seen this giant out there on the scene in the carjacking, they would have noticed that he was a giant, that he was tall, that he wasn't average size.
The first encounter, he was a passenger in a car, is that right?
That's a bogus story. The first encounter, April 15th, a police officer came upon
a car. I'm talking about with the witnesses. The witnesses who are victims of the carjacking or whatever you want to call it.
They all were made to exit the car, but the car was taken.
Yeah, but he, the first encounter, he's talking from the front seat of his car. He's sitting down.
Right, but
I'm just going on facts here. I
hope I haven't read the record wrong for the last 2 years.
Well, if you put the gun to the head or whatever, it's my car, gets the driver out, he gets in the car and tells the other to get out. I'm just wondering how this giant is the whole issue here. Because the fact is, he says it's his car, he's sitting down. I don't know what he did when he got out, whether he swarmed over the car or just jumped over there. But I recognize that there is a big difference here, but not much, unless there's a complete dispute about him taking over the car with a gun.
Well,
or somebody.
Somebody
with a face just like his.
Perhaps.
Yeah.
That's a good question. I believe that they had a chance to see how tall he was, and I not analyzed the record as carefully as Your Honor just did.
Well, I wasn't very careful. That's just what occurred.
I can't respond about what the record says about their opportunity to observe. I was convinced from reading it that they had a chance to observe and that they should have been able to see that he was 6'9", and I might have read the record.
6'9" now, huh?
Well, 6'7".
But I think the thing is, you might have a good argument if all we had was the eyewitness's description of him and maybe an ID made off of a photo array, but we've got lineup IDs and we've got other strong evidence linking him to this stolen car.
Well, we have the lineup which followed the photos which followed. The detective first showed one photo to the woman who claims that she sold the car to this man. She also claims that she signed the title. But we know she didn't sign the title because her name wasn't on the title when it was subsequently transferred to her sister-in-law. She's shown one picture, and after she sees the picture, she says, "Oh, the man I sold the car to was Wooden McHale." When she first talks about the incident at the carjacking, she doesn't know the name of the man she sold the car to. That she talks to the beat officers when she arrives at the scene. She talks to the detectives initially. She doesn't know who she sold the car to. But after seeing the picture, she knows that it's...
Right. This is a great argument for why he was acquitted of the criminal charges.
He shouldn't have been charged.
But, there's probable cause here, which is a very low threshold. And that's what your claim is keyed to.
I've been unsuccessfully arguing probable cause to this court for a long time, and sometimes I think there was once that I convinced the panel that there was no probable cause, and I still believe that the standard is too low, that This guy was 6'7". The story about the April 15th appeal card invalid, where you had a suspended, Mr. Owsley's license was suspended. According to the officer, we found him sitting in a car with no license plates, the engine running, no title, and we let him go. We didn't arrest him. I don't think anybody who's sitting in this courtroom should believe that. That's incredible. Mr. Owsley, whoever was in that car, would have been arrested, taken in handcuffs down to the police station. Police don't come upon somebody who's in a car with a peeled steering column, doesn't have a valid license, doesn't explain why he's there without license plates in the car, and just say, well, have a nice day, sir. They get arrested. There's something bogus about that. There's something phony, which the detective had ample time, should have looked into.
Well, they impounded the car, I presume, right? Didn't they take the car at that point?
They seized the van.
Have a nice day. I will keep your car.
Well, but it wasn't his car. Whoever was in there had stolen the car. Or had, there was probable cause to believe that whoever was in that car.
You say he should have been arrested then.
Yeah, whoever that was should have been arrested. Mm-hmm. And there was clearly probable cause. Even I would say that there was probable cause to arrest him and to find him guilty of driving on a revoked or suspended license, which is a serious crime. And the car was seemingly stolen with the peeled steering column, but the officer's detective said, well, that's not important. We have this report which says that it was had to be Mr. Owsley because we have this report. We have that. We have the height discrepancy. And then we have the very unusual identification procedures where first one picture is shown to the woman who claims she sold the car, and then a series of pictures are shown to people who don't speak English well in a fast food restaurant or the police station. There's a discrepancy about where it happened, there's uncertainty about what really happens at that identification procedure, and then later Mr. Owsley's arrested and, he's identified at the lineup. That shouldn't have been probable cause. That should have been, somebody should have realized this before Mr. Owsley was locked up for whatever it was, 23 months, that he's the wrong guy, that there's no basis to proceed with this case. And I will continue to come before this court and say that there's no probable cause when I think there is, and I thank you.
All different ways to make a living.
Thank you. Mr. Powell.
May it please the court. The information Detective Mendez uncovered in investigating the carjacking, as well as the victim's identification of plaintiff, Mr. Owsley, as the carjacker, provided probable cause to arrest plaintiff. Even assuming probable cause did not exist, Detective Mendez is entitled to qualified immunity because the information she gathered in that investigation would allow a reasonable officer to conclude that plaintiff's arrest was lawful. This morning I'll explain why there was probable cause to arrest plaintiff, and we will...
Say that again. You're going to explain what? Slow down a little bit.
Sorry, Your Honor. I'll explain why there was probable cause to arrest plaintiff, and we will rest on our brief with respect to qualified immunity. It's undisputed that the victims here told the police that the offender claimed the van was his. Maria Gutierrez told Detective Mendez she previously owned the van, but had sold it to a man whom she later identified as plaintiff from a photo. A tow report for the van listed plaintiff as the van's sole occupant just a month before the carjacking. Two of the carjacking victims here identified plaintiff from a photo array. Indeed, the victim's identification from the photo array alone supplied probable cause. This court has repeatedly held that the police have probable cause based on the identification or report of a single credible eyewitness or victim. The disputes plaintiff raises are not material. First, even if Salgado and Palmino, two of the victims here, were in the same room when they viewed the photo array, that would not make their identification of plaintiff unreliable. There's simply no evidence here. Councilman mentioned uncertainty, but really what it is, there's no evidence here that the two were seated near each other in the room, that they were talking, that they could see each other, that they knew which selection from the photo array the other had made, and there were two photo arrays here presented to each, to Palomino and Salgado. In short, there's simply no evidence that the victims' identifications had any influence whatsoever on each other. nor is that identification undermined by the discrepancy between the victim's initial description of the carjacker and the plaintiff's claimed height and weight. The photo array consisted of headshots only, and the victims gave their initial descriptions to police under what can only be characterized as severe stress immediately after both had been forced out of their van at gunpoint and the offender had pointed his gun at the forehead of their five-year-old daughter. Even under far less harrowing circumstances, people have great difficulty. Many people have great difficulty judging accurately height and weight. And this court held in Tangwall, in similarly traumatic circumstances, that divergence, even significant divergence between a victim's initial description of the offender and the suspect's actual characteristics doesn't defeat probable cause.
Was that a key issue at the criminal trial?
I believe it was, Your Honor, yes. And certainly that was the place to bring that out. But at the probable cause stage, where Detective Mendez had the identifications by the victims, as well as the knowledge of the sale of the van, reclaiming of the van by Gutierrez or her husband, and the tow report showing plaintiff in the van on April 15th, a mere month before the carjacking, she certainly had probable cause to proceed to initiate the criminal process and allow the jury and the criminal prosecution to sort out the inconsistencies.
Before the arrest, what was connected to the initial encounter where the car without the license plate and the driver without a valid license, the car was impounded but there was no arrest? Was that connected to the next issue with the carjacking? Is that where his picture came from? Did he keep the license or something?
Your Honor, it's a little unclear from the record how Detective Mendez got the picture, the photo of Mr. Owsley.
He didn't have the so-called invalid driver's license. I assume he left that with whomever had it. Or do we know? Mr. Flaxman's raising all this stuff about they should have known because of that initial encounter, should have arrested him then, et cetera. Is there some part of that initial encounter that went into the decision for the arrest?
Yes, absolutely, Your Honor. Because the tow report, the police report from that date, listed the van's occupant as Mr. Owsley. So it had his rather unusual name, and the spelling's unusual, in the tow report, and it had the number from a driver's license that was presented to the police. And that number matches the number on Mr. Owsley's driver's license. Whether or not it's suspended, just because a license is suspended or expired doesn't mean it can't be presented to the police.
Well, so you're not sure where they got the picture of him then? Was he previously arrested?
It's possible. It's also possible that he got it from the driver's license, but I suspect that he may have already been in the system.
Well, he didn't have it. They had some picture to show him.
That's right. That's
right. Identified
to show Ms. Gutierrez and then to create the photo array using the characteristics of Mr. Owsley, the computer-generated photo array for the victims to view and to make their selection if they saw the offender, and they unequivocally picked Mr. Owsley. There's nothing inherently incredible either in Ms. Gutierrez's claim that she sold the van a few months prior without observing the formalities of a standard commercial transaction or without taking the steps necessary to transfer title, especially since the buyer didn't insist on them. And it's incumbent on the buyer to re-register the van and to change the plates, and that didn't happen here, but doesn't make her statement inherently incredible. Nor is it material to probable cause whether she or her husband, whichever it was, reclaimed the van from the tow yard and what exactly she received, the tow report or the title or both, back in her mailbox. It's undisputed that one of the Gutierrez's reclaimed the van after it was towed, and on that date Mr. Owsley was the only occupant, and that one of the Gutierrez's reclaimed the van from the tow yard and loaned it to Ms. Salgado.
But at that point, they're still the record owners, right?
That's correct. So it makes sense that they would have been found in a record search. And contrary to plaintiff's claim, the story did lead to further investigation here. Based on it, Detective Mendez pulled the tow report and found Mr. Owsley's name and pursued the theory that the carjacking was the means the perpetrator used to reclaim what he said was his. This theory held up when the victims later identified plaintiff from the photo array. If there are no further questions, we'd ask that this court affirm the district court's judgment. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Flaxman, anything further?
In listening to the eloquent explanation of why there was probable cause, the phrase that came to mind is willing suspension of disbelief. It couldn't have happened that they found Mr. Owsley with an expired license, a peeled steering column, no license plates, the motor running, and let him go. It couldn't have happened that the woman signed the title, but when her husband went to reclaim the title, her name wasn't on it. There's stuff that doesn't make any sense. We're also asked to say that this photo identification, which took at a fast food restaurant where the witnesses were together speaking probably amongst themselves in Spanish, where the officers don't speak Spanish, was a laboratory procedure that produced an accurate result. There's too much garbage in this case. There should be too much garbage in this case for the court to say that, yes, there was probable cause to arrest, the officers acted reasonably, there's no jury question, and we're sorry you spent 23 months in jail. That's not our problem. That's the Cook County's problem for taking so long to get the trial. There should be a trial in this case, and please, thank you.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.